On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Wisconsin's top education official and a bit of a roadmap for where we intend to go. The U.S. Department of Education approving all but a slice of Wisconsin's overall plan for pandemic relief funds. We'll talk about that. The spread of COVID in schools and how districts are responding. And we start with the movement away from standardized testing and what it signifies. Should the UW system carry on with not requiring the ACT or SAT for admission? Parents, how is your child doing in these times? What do you want to convey? 800-642-1234. Jill Underle is State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Superintendent Underle, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much, Kate. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. So starting with college entrance exams, ACTs, SATs, UW system extends the test optional policy through 2025 school year. We heard from Speaker Robin Voss Friday, who said extending the policy just worsens poor performance, leaves high school students ill-equipped for college. How do you feel about the policy extension?
You know, I'm mixed on the policy extension. I see it on one hand that when you take the ACT, it's a measure, just a one-time, you know, point-in-time measure. It's also in our state statutes that we have to have a assessment at 11th grade. And so since we had low participation rates on the ACT, it made sense to require the ACT for our 11th graders. So, I mean, I see both sides of it. But on the other hand, I know the UW system is investigating it. It seems that nationally, lots of very competitive schools are also breaking away from this as an entrance requirement. I think how it ends up, it remains to be known. I know that the system is studying it. So, I do feel mixed about it because we use that information in different ways, so like scholarships, for example. It might put more emphasis on GPAs instead. So, yeah, there's a lot to learn. But, again, we're in a pandemic and conditions are not conducive, you know, for students to be, you know, measured equally, I suppose, with an ACT.
Are you reconsidering that position, DPI still requiring 11th graders to take the ACT, given what the UW system is doing?
We are talking about it. Part of it is, again, it's state statute. It's not a DPI thing. State statute requires an assessment statewide in all our schools for 9th, 10th, and 11th grade. And so that's why it made sense to require something in 11th grade, the ACT, because it can't be, again, something that is the smarter balanced assessment, which we require in 9th and 10th grade. So, yeah, if we do move away from the ACT, we'd have to come up with a different assessment.
Looking now at COVID, DHS active COVID investigations by facility type, it's educational facilities that account for nearly half of all current facility investigations, almost 1,400. How are your districts doing with managing outbreaks?
I think the districts are doing the best that they possibly can. You know, I was a school district superintendent the earlier part of this year in Iowa, Lafayette counties, and it's day to day. You know, we're trying to make sure that we have mitigation measures in place, you know, masking, for example, you know, just making sure that people who have symptoms stay home. You know, I can tell you that it's more stressful this year on our school administrators than it was last year because we know more about COVID. We know more how it's spread than what we did at the start of the pandemic or even start of the last school year. So we're able to adjust. But, you know, we have a lot of challenges. And so we have to approach it like we would any other infectious disease.
The 5 to 11-year-old COVID vaccine age group rollout well underway, as you know. And some schools have been holding vaccine clinics. How did this mode of vaccine delivery work? What's been uptake like when vaccines are given in schools?
When vaccines are given, I mean, again, it's a strong mitigation measure. We know that the vaccines work. And I kind of look at it from, you know, a very high level view. What's the goal here, right? We want our schools to be open, right? We don't want our schools to close. If we want our schools to be open, we need to do the things that we know work. And we're so grateful for science and the fact that we are able to have a vaccine for the youngest kids because that was the most concerning part earlier in the school year and much of the end of last school year was, you know, we can't fully open our schools and kids and staff can't fully be safe unless the youngest kids are protected.
We have Jill Enderle with us, State Superintendent of Public Instruction. You can join in. Are you a parent? What questions do you have for the State Superintendent? How has your child done in school this year? What about learning loss? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's move now to pandemic relief aid for schools through ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act. We saw the co-chairs of Joint Finance Committee said to you in a letter Thursday to immediately propose an alternative to the state's education pandemic relief plan after part of it was rejected by the Department of Education. You shot back Friday in a letter to JFC that lawmakers had engaged in a game of high-stakes chicken. Can you explain this disagreement that's going on?
Yeah, so we're talking about 5%. So 95% of the plan was approved. And back in May, so this is before I took office. I took office in July. So back in May, Joint Finance Committee had a Motion 57, which took our 10% set aside, which all states were required to take. So it's about 100, maybe around 150 million-ish. And 5%, so that money was supposed to go to the kids that lost the most during the pandemic. So when you think back to that first year of, you know, the 2021 school year, the first full year of the pandemic in our schools, the kids that lost the most, right, what comes to mind? You know, it's the kids who don't have the enrichment, the kids who don't have the after-school programs or the preschool and the childcare and the full-day 4K and all these things. Perhaps it's the individual literacy tutoring or the math tutoring. There's a lot of things, mental health, technology, all these things. Well, in May, Motion 57, our joint finance chairs wanted to reward, and that was the word they used in their letter, reward schools for staying open. And we know that a lot of
for in-class instruction.
In-class instruction, thank you. Reward them for being open for in-class instruction in person. And we know that a lot of schools couldn't. You know, they have outdated facilities. They were overcrowded. I mean, there's a lot of things. And so anyway, DPI at the time warned the co-chairs and said, look, this isn't going to pass muster. It doesn't meet the law. And they, you know, said submit it anyway. So we did. And we've been in communication, you know, this is a lot of money. The U.S. Department of Ed is really looking at these plans. They asked some questions over the summer. We kept the co-chairs apprised of everything. And so it came back Monday of last week saying, look, everything looks good except for this 5%. You can't reward schools for being open for in-person instruction. It doesn't meet the intent of what the U.S. Congress said needed to be done. So we had to, you know, they said, fix it. And so we shared that information with the Joint Finance, and they shot back with this letter saying that I was colluding, or DPI was colluding with Congress on this, or with the U.S. Department of Ed, sorry. And that was what was so shocking to me, was because, like, we knew this was going to happen. We kind of prepared them for it. We've been in communication with them. And for them to you know, make the claim that we weren't working with them and that I was, you know, somehow obstructing, or, you know, it was just offensive and it was very political. And so, yeah, I shot back. I was like, look, if you know, rewarding schools is not what we do, right? The Department of Public Instruction is, you know, we get this money from the federal government. We have to follow the rules of the federal government. I, as a state constitutional officer, I have to uphold the Constitution of the United States. I'm going to follow what Congress says.
I just want to pause here for just a moment, because you told JFC there is middle ground here. What would you suggest as a compromise?
Yeah, sorry to go off on that, but you're right. There is middle ground. We can certainly find middle ground. They're going to have to budge, though. They're going to have to get away from the notion that we're using this money to reward schools that were open for in-person instruction. Rather, we have to identify the areas that, you know, are in the most need. Maybe we can use that $77 million for after-school programming, for tutoring, for learning loss. That's what we need to do.
Jill Enderle, superintendent of DPI, Department of Public Instruction, took office in July. Is your school facing a shortage of substitute teachers? What about bus drivers? How is that affecting education? What should the state do better to support teachers and students? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learned in October public school enrollment did not rebound this fall after last year's big pandemic-related drop in numbers. And last month, the State Education Department released test scores, how students are performing statewide. Is your family coping with learning loss? How was your school helping your child catch up to grade level? Are mental health needs being met? 800-642-1234. Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Enderle stays with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's take a call now. John is joining us in Appleton. Hi, John. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks, both of you, for your great service. I wanted to offer the idea of a year-round calendar where students are in session six to nine weeks at a time, and then they get 2 to 3 weeks off as a way to address learning loss. I'm a former educator, counselor, and school board member, and think that the school should look at this, especially with learning loss. There's a nice plan outlined on the NAYRE website, NAYRE.org, that I would cite as an example.
John,
what do you think about that?
John, thank you. Superintendent Enderle.
Thank you so much for that question, John. No, I agree with you on that. I think it would certainly be beneficial for, like you said, learning loss. Kids are learning all year. You know, we have more frequent, shorter breaks, I guess, rather than like the 3-month break that we traditionally have over summer. You know, it also, I think, would help with mental health. I think, you know, when you look at burnout and you look not just at our kids, but also our adults that are working in schools, I think that calendar, a more balanced calendar, what they call it in other states, is beneficial. The issue we have in Wisconsin is that we have a state statute that says that we can't start school until September 1st. And so we'd have to kind of get around, you know, we'd have to somehow change that law. You know, and that would be, you know, something I would be in favor of.
John, thank you for that. Let's go to Jennifer now. Hi, Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just looking at how state report cards just came out and knowing past history, Wisconsin reading scores have been continuing to go down. And due to COVID, now would be a more than perfect time to kind of address some of that loss in the area of reading. And looking at scientifically how reading happens in the brain, and using some of those resources across the state of Wisconsin and implementing that, how does Superintendent Enderle plan to address that the issue of reading in our state?
Yeah, I agree with you. I looking at the CLEP scores, they're certainly concerning when you look at the number of kids who are proficient in reading versus, you know, what they consider basic or even advanced. I mean, we got to get that big group of kids there in the middle moving ahead. I think you're right. I mean, we certainly know what works when it comes down to the different methods and the science of reading. It's making sure that we have a statewide plan to address it. And so that's what we're doing at DPI, is creating the statewide plan with stakeholders from the legislature, as well as the professional reading organizations and reading professors and teachers. And so once we have that in place, we can really work with our school districts to make sure our teachers know the way to roll things out through professional development and looking at the different interventions that work with our kids. It's just, in our state, we are very much a local control state. There's a patchwork of different programs throughout the state. Some, you know, school districts use a certain type of method and of instruction. Others use other things, you know. And so having some consistency around, you know, materials, for example, and making sure that our teachers are trained in the best instructional practices will help.
We've had conversations about teaching phonics and the role mm-hmm. of phonics. Where does that fall as you look at districts around the state and the use of phonics?
Yeah, and in phonics, you know, I'm just going to speak from the experiences of the districts that I know the best. It's one of the tools, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about how instruction of reading takes place, you know, you have like your curriculum that's about 80% of the kids are going to understand it. And then, you know, phonics is part of that. But some kids need more intensive help in phonics. They need more intensive instruction. And I'll be honest, I was one of those kids. And so making sure that we have our teachers trained to provide that intensive intervention is important. And, you know, our schools do have that, but we don't have a good measurement as to what extent or how, you know, how in-depth they go.
Jennifer, thank you for that call. I want to turn to substitute teachers because we've been watching reports and asking questions about a possible substitute teacher shortage in Wisconsin, that demand for subs in some districts outstrips the available teachers to step in. What are you finding in this area?
Yes, we have seen substitute shortages, not just with teachers, but with in other parts of our building, like food service or custodial or bus drivers. And so, I mean, Wisconsin is no different. We're seeing it across the nation. And, you know, when you think about prior to the pandemic, we had a shortage. And the pandemic just made it worse. And partly because substitute teachers tend to be former teachers. A lot of them are former teachers who recently retired. And many of those initially, in the beginning stages of COVID, were part of that most vulnerable group. So they didn't sub. And then it's compounded. You know, we have we made some changes to our licensing requirements when it comes to substitutes. So, for example, you need a 2-year associate's degree now, and you can get a substitute teaching license. Before, you had to have a 4-year degree. Now, you know, you can get those who have 4-year degrees can get a 1-year license, which allows them to substitute teach for an entire year. So we encourage school districts to build and grow relationships with colleges and universities in our communities, but we have to look at pay too. You know, the pay for substitute teachers varies from district to district. In a lot of the districts in my area, it's between $100 and $120 a day. You know, do the math. It's not, you know, you can find more pay, I think, in other sectors.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jill Underle, who is the head of the State Department of Public Instruction. You can join in with your questions about education around the state. Are you a teacher at a school that's seeing a shortage of substitute teachers, bus drivers, of other areas in the school? How is that affecting your school, your job? 800-642-1234. I want to look at report cards. DPI released grade cards for the first time since the start of the pandemic last month. The upshot, 87% met or exceeded expectations in the 2020 to 2021 school year. What do you see out of these test scores?
Yeah, so, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, we strongly urge caution when attempting to compare this year's report cards to previous years. So the ones that came out in November were for the 2020-21 school year. We're in a pandemic, and it affects, you know, I mean, you look at how it just weighed heavily on our students and our schools. And when you want, you know, when you want an assessment, you want to make sure that the conditions are the same, and they aren't, right? So, you know, when you look at the calculations, so this was determined prior to my administration that it was probably a good time to change some of the metrics. And so when they looked at the process of updating the cut scores, they did so earlier this year. They had a technical advisory committee, you know, that looked at the methodology that would preserve the distribution of schools and district ratings in the previous cut scores. Hmm. So in other words, because of the new calculation, I mean, overall schools and district scores changed, but they really didn't change that much. The vast majority of school districts didn't change. And so what it did was this updated cut score preserved the intent of the previous cut scores after the new calculations were applied. But I just want to urge caution. I mean, when we look at, we're not our best selves, you know, when you look at the impact this pandemic has had. Some school districts have weathered the pandemic better than other school districts. And that really, you look at families. some families have weathered it better than other families and communities. And so we, all of that is reflected when a kid takes a test, right? And so we need to just urge caution. I think it's going to be uneven for years ahead. Yeah, it really will be.
Superintendent Underley, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much.
Jill Underley is State Superintendent of Public Instruction in Wisconsin. Just ahead, the State Capitol Report continues with De Pere Republican State Senator Andre Jacques. What questions do you have about how lawmakers are dealing with the pandemic fallout? Do you have issues with your water? Is your family on bottled water? 800-642-1234 to join in. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.